ESPN College Football Podcast.
Welcome to the College Football Podcast. Kevin Agandi here with you. And as we do every single Wednesday, Booger McFarland will join us in a moment. He's got a different name today because he dressed up for the podcast here on October 6th. Finally, after a month, it's nice to see Taylor. We have plenty to cover, including two DEFCON teams coming from the SEC. And why Booger is depressed and upset, and also why he flipped me off at the end of the podcast, you'll find out. Also, we talk a little bit about pancakes, a special recommendation on how to set your meal up on breakfast time, given to him by a very famous Iowa alum. We'll also break down the unbeatens in the Big Ten, why I think a team that is with a loss in the Big Ten is still the best. And Boog will tell us the best team in the country right now, and it's not Alabama. Before we get to Booger, two things I want to mention. First, check out Fantasy Focus Football. It's 5 days a week. You can watch them on ESPN Plus or listen to the show on your favorite podcast app. Matthew Barry, Field Yates, Stefania Bell, and Daniel Dopp are giving you key waiver wire ads for week five, as well as some players you need to keep an eye on this week. Also, the Peabody and Emmy award-winning 30 for 30 film series presents Once Upon a Time in Queens, a four-part documentary event about the city, the swagger, and the wild ride of the 1986 Mets. All four parts of Once Upon a Time in Queens available to stream now on ESPN Plus and the ESPN app. All right, let's start first off. Because we seem to get updates on Booger's attire as our storyline every single Wednesday. So just a couple weeks ago, he decided to join us with just two towels. And last week was the back scratcher, the $2 back scratcher. And today we're actually in a collared shirt. Like, Booger, I don't even recognize you. You're Anthony McFarland. You're not Booger.
Yeah, today is more Anthony. I had to be a little bit more corporate this morning. I had to go on one of ESPN's corporate shows, which is Get Up First Thing in the Morning. And unfortunately, it's probably not a good idea to wear a towel on that show. I like Greeny. I don't know if Greeny would be quite as responsive as I would need him to be to me in a towel. So I decided to put on a collared shirt.
Well, America was saved. Let's just say that. America was saved with you just being in a collared shirt. But by the way, this is a couple days removed from the Monday night experience. And for people who listen to the pod, Booger not only just, talks about college football, he talks about the NFL on Get Up, but also Saturdays on ABC. Then he goes Sundays with Boomer to talk about the NFL with prime time on ESPN Plus. And then on Mondays, he flies to the Monday night game for Monday Night Countdown. And that's one of the treats for you. You get to see all these brand new stadiums. You were in Vegas earlier this year, and you were talking about that, raving about that. And then now you get the chance to see SoFi, where they invest $5 billion in LA.
Big difference.
This phenomenal stadium for the Chargers and Rams. And then we've got to deal with a weather delay. And you, Susie, and Shefty, and the crew, you've got to fill up the time. But first off, Boog, help me understand, how do you have a weather delay with when you spend $5 billion on a stadium that's not covered? What happened?
So first of all, the stadium cost $5 billion because they actually had to put the stadium in the ground. So Kev, it's the craziest thing ever. If you go from street level into SoFi, you're actually coming in on like level five or six. So the actual field is about another 50 to, well, probably more than that, probably 100 feet below field level, because I think it has something to do with the TSA and the FAA or whatever. One of them A's to do with
close to the airport. Yes.
Yes. Close to the airport. Thank you. And so they couldn't go, but so high. So, you know, what do people with money do? They just spend more money and improvise. And they just started using dynamite, blowing up the ground. That's number one. Secondly, here's the thing. It's really not a roof. It's a canopy, but it is covered. But the problem is this, is it's an open air situation, meaning it's covered with a canopy, but a couple spots in the end zones are open. So what does that mean? That means like when you walk in there, whatever the temperature outside is the temperature inside, which I did not like because Boog sweats a lot. And so Boog walked in and I'm like, hey, man, can somebody turn the damn AC on? And the dude was like, it is on. I'm like, well, why is it so hot in here? They're like, it's open air. And I look straight up and it's a roof. Then they explained to me about the canopy and the reflection of the sun. And I'm like, okay, this is going to be a hot one. So I started rolling off about seven sheets of paper towel because I know during the show I'm going to sweat.
Yeah.
Then comes the lightning delay. And I'm like, why the hell do we have a lightning delay? We have a canopy. And then Steve Young pretended to be a meteorologist. And he said, well, lightning can't go sideways, to which every Al Roker wannabe across America tweeted at him saying, yes, lightning can go sideways. Or we had a weather delay because somewhere we've seen a strike of lightning that went sideways in 90 degrees. So they thought that it was probably a good idea if we postponed the game for a little while. Here's the problem with that, Kev. They told us on the field. So you mean to tell me that the teams need to leave the field, but you want me, Shefty, Steve Young, and Susie Colbert to go stand in the line of fire? I didn't really like that. I let ESPN know about that, to which they said, hey, thank you. We appreciate it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you got your rubber soles on. You'll be fine when the strike comes down.
Are you kidding me?
That's the first thing I thought of. I was like, wait a second. Why are they on the field and it's okay? And then secondly, I learned something.
Same thing too.
But it's the second I learned that there's actual lightning in Southern California. I know that there's lightning everywhere around the world, but it's just something you've never heard before. Or first off, it never rains there. They've been droughts forever. And then, whoa, there's lightning around. Like, it was blown away. But thank you for the education of SoFi and digging up. That's just only rich people understand. Like you, when you got to dig up your pool, you dig underground. Like, rich people understand that. Us normal people on a podcast don't. All right, let's get to college football. And right now, I want to throw a couple things at you. 5 weeks of football so far under our belt. 34 ranked teams have already lost. The most through the AP poll era, and that goes back to the 1930s, 1936 to be exact. So that means, you know, in a season where there is a lot of chaos outside this top four, we will see some type of chaos coming soon as we get deep into the October schedule and conference play. And I want to focus on two specific conversations here. And let's start here for the Big Ten. There are four unbeatens: Michigan State, Michigan, and Iowa, Penn State. Iowa and Penn State facing off against each other. Top five matchup. Cannot wait. We'll get to the SEC conversation in a moment. But let's not even forget, too, that we can have those four teams, but Ohio State, it feels like, has turned the corner as well. So the one-loss Buckeyes, be careful for them. As we get ready and look at these games, we'll get to the ABC schedule in a moment. Iowa, Penn State, what's the one thing that stands out in your mind? This game in Iowa City, Kinnick Stadium, it's going to be phenomenal when it comes to the environment. On the field, what has to happen?
I think when you look at Iowa's defense, I've been truly just blown away. You know, when we talk a lot about Georgia's defense because they're shutting people out. They got back-to-back shutouts. What they've done has been outstanding. They most resemble maybe an NFL-type defense. But when you look at what Iowa did, think about what Iowa did to Little Tua. Okay, what is it? Five interceptions against Little Tua. They made him come back to earth really, really quick. That defense is outstanding. They got a good defensive line. They can get to the quarterback, and on the back end, they don't give up big plays. They keep the ball in front of you. And if Iowa's defense can play that way, it allows their offense to not be as explosive as maybe you would like them to be. They're going to run the football. Spencer Petras, hey, big guy, just don't lose the game. We can start to make some big plays. The passing game continues to get better. So I think Iowa's defense, as long as it performs at that level, it's going to force Penn State and Sean Clifford to throw the football over the top. I don't think they can do it, Kev. I think they're going to be forced to run the football with Noah Kane. My early lean, if I'm looking at Vegas, I'm probably leaning toward the Iowa Hawkeyes. And I know everybody in Iowa dislikes Book because, you know, I kind of said that their program, this was a few years ago, just bringing you up to speed. You know, they talked about their strength coach, and at the time it was Chris Dorr, and he was making, I don't know, $800,000. And I'm like, why in the hell is your strength coach making 800 grand? They're like, he develops everybody. He's a developer. Okay, great. He's gone. He's moved on. But that's why the people in Iowa don't really like me. But I am picking you, Iowa, this week I am picking Kirk Ferentz and the Hawkeyes against the Nittany Lions.
The one thing that they do really well with Iowa through the years, whether it's Doyle, now it's no longer Doyle, but Ferentz's philosophy is we'll bring in 2 3-star guys. They'll be yes. ready by the time it's their junior season, right? Yep. And we're not going to get the one and dones, or when I say one and dones, we're not going to get the 5-star guys, right? We're not going to get the guys that are going to, ooh, it's shiny new toy, right? We're going to get the guys that we know are going to, no matter what, develop. They'll get in the weight room that freshman year. They'll eat and eat some more. And then by the time they're a junior and senior, they'll be disciplined. They'll make smart decisions. And that's why what we see with this defense. They make sure you make the mistake. Right. When you make the mistake, we capitalize. And I think that environment's going to play a huge role in how Penn State handles it. That's one thing we've seen, I think, over the last year. Many of these teams on the road in loud places, they didn't have it a year ago. How do they adjust? Sean Clifford, though, 11 touchdowns, 3 picks. I think he's been really smart with the football. I think this game, I'm with you. I think it's going to be a grind out type of game. Ugly as heck, but as it should be, because Penn State knows that environment, that type of experience. We saw that with Wisconsin, right? With that buildup, I think Penn State wins because they have enough playmakers on the offensive side and Clifford doesn't make a mistake. Because to me, this is a game where Jahan Dotson has to separate himself. You Correct. Mentioned Noah Kane, right? Jahan Dotson has to make a couple of screen plays and break off. And then the speed wins on the outside. And if he could do that, where you have like a 50-yard play, we've seen Dotson do that, or you're in within the 20-yard in the red zone, you don't call fade, you find the ball with Jahan Dotson, the back part of the end zone, right? And highest man gets it, right? And that to me will be the difference in a game like this. Can Clifford handle that experience and handle that environment? I think he can.
I can see that, but minus a couple of Dotson plays, Kev, it's going to be tough. Now, if you're telling me that at the end of the game, Dotson has 6 for 150 and 2 touchdowns, okay, I say Penn State wins. I just know if he's going to get that. That's the thing that I'm saying.
Yeah, I'm with you. Regardless, I think we know it's going to be a close game.
Yes.
It feels like a 20-17 type of game, and whoever makes a mistake right at the end.
Correct. Yes.
Clifford has the ball the final 3 minutes. Does he lead them to a long drive or does he throw an interception? Right. And that's how it's going to come down, because I'll tell you the other side. If Iowa has the ball and they're trailing in the final 3 minutes of the game, I'm banking on that Penn State defense against Spencer Petras. Spencer's done a pretty good job, but I'm banking on Penn State in that environment, understanding what we saw and what they did against Wisconsin. They were fantastic. Now, Graham Mertz is a completely different story, and Wisconsin can't run the football, but Penn State's defense, they got some playmakers on all three levels that go on instinct and may make big plays late.
They do have playmakers, Kev, but I just go back to that game against Wisconsin. If Graham Mertz doesn't self-destruct in the red zone, he fumbled once, he threw an interception, then Wisconsin may win that game. And so, listen, it's going to be a really, really good game. I think this is an opportunity for the Big Ten to showcase what I think are 2 of their best 4 teams. I would throw in Michigan, Michigan State, and or Ohio State, depending on how you rank those 3 teams. But I think Michigan – and we've talked a lot about them on this podcast, their identity, running the football. They're going to be in every football game. Michigan State, I love what Mel Tucker has done, what they're doing. And Ohio State, to me, is the wild card, because talent-wise, they are probably the most talented team in the Big Ten. I don't know about you. I don't trust C.J. Stroud. I do not trust him yet. He's not shown me enough where Boog can give him his stamp of approval. And so I think when we look at this game this weekend, you look at Iowa, Penn State, this could be to decide on the field who the best team in the Big Ten is, or at least to this point.
And we could have a rematch at the end of the season.
Yes, exactly. Right?
And exactly. Yep. I can't wait to see it out played. Listen, the East is jam-packed. There's a lot to be played out in front of us. If you ask me today who would I pick to win the entire Big Ten, I'm still going Ohio State for 3 reasons. All right? 3.
Well, first of all, nobody asked you, so you have to give us these 3 reasons.
This is a podcast where I'm talking. Okay. Travion Henderson, Garrett Wilson, okay. Chris Olave. Those are the 3. Okay. And I didn't mention the quarterback. Okay. And maybe the quarterback will be on the same page by the end of the month, right? Because as he builds confidence, like, hey, screen game, get those guys involved. And as you've mentioned, let's get Travion Henderson the football at least 25 times, no matter what, good things will happen. That's where I still think Ohio State's the team, but we will learn a lot about Penn State and Iowa this weekend. I felt like also, Boog, we learned a hell of a lot this past weekend in the SEC, and that is about Alabama and about Georgia, considering who they were facing and how they just said, listen, we hear all the noise about Ole Miss. We hear all the noise about Arkansas. Enough, right? When you look at these two teams and exactly what they did this past weekend, who's the best team in the SEC?
Georgia. I think, Kale, because I've been fooled way too many times, Kale. I go back to the Broncos against Seattle. I go back to some of the greatest baseball games that I've ever seen. And I'm leading to this. We have been fooled in the last 5 to 6 years to think that good offense beats really good defense. But I've been reminded time and time again, Kev, really good defense still trumps anything. Look at the Buccaneers against the Chiefs. Look at the Seattle Seahawks against that Peyton Manning team for the Broncos that was scoring 50 points a game in the Legion of Boom. Like, look at all the things. Look at all the things that we've seen from a sports standpoint. And 9 times out of 10, Kev, good defense trumps really, really good offense. And the Georgia Bulldogs have the best defense in the sport right now, as far as college football. Am I concerned about the mailman? Yeah, I'm concerned about Stetson Bennett, okay? Am I concerned about their lack of explosiveness as far as plays down the field? Sure. But damn it, Kale, if you can't score, you can't beat them. I mean, we can sit up here and talk about that. And I just look at what Georgia could do in a potential matchup against Alabama. You can't run the football against Georgia. So now you're going to tell me that Bryce Young is going to methodically move the ball against Kirby Smart. I need to see it. So right now, I think the best team in college football is the Georgia Bulldogs. I think because of their defense, I understand your questions and your skepticism when it comes to their offense and their quarterbacks, and I get it. But, man, I have been burned too many times choosing the team or the player or the sport or the best offense in that sport. I'm going with the best defense.
One offensive touchdown allowed in the first 5 games, only program the last 25 years to do it. The defense has scored twice. The special teams has scored as well. To me, it's this defense going to hold everything together till we can get JT Daniels back. And who knows if we will, but Kyaris Jackson, Darnell Washington, George Pickens, all question marks to see when they can come back healthy, because they'll be humongous boosts for this offense. But I'm with you where we don't know anything about Stetson Bennett in a big game situation. Not you can beat Vanderbilt, okay, and well, Arkansas, yeah. You know, but big game situation.
We saw him in a big game last time they played Alabama. Remember last year?
It was ugly.
Yes, that's my point. So he didn't deliver. So I understand the skepticism when we talk about him, because we've seen him against Alabama in a big game. I think that game was in Georgia, so he had the home crowd with him and all that good stuff, and he didn't perform well. So I understand it. But, man, I'm just telling you, Kev, good defense is hard to beat, man. It's kind of like a large stack of hotcakes with peanut butter and hot syrup. Like, I don't care what's going on outside, that's hard to beat. Like, that would be hard to beat, especially if the pancakes are hot and the peanut butter is just melting and the syrup just kind of drips off the edge. Yeah, my goodness.
Well, first off, now let's help the audience as well. Who was the man that introduced that to you, that slice of heaven, that concept?
Yes. Yeah, so again, people in Iowa will love me for this.
Yes, they will.
Because one of their own introduced this to me, Dallas Clark, when I was playing for the Indianapolis Colts, when I first got traded there. I guess this was his way to kind of make friends with me or to be nice. He's like, hey, in the breakfast line, he's like, hey, you like pancakes? I'm like, dude, who doesn't like pancakes? It's just like a food to make you feel good. He's like, hey, you like peanut butter? I said, I could eat it every day. He said, do yourself a favor. Get the pancakes hot, spread the peanut butter on top, and just lightly drizzle the syrup. It's what people in the Midwest do all the time. So I fell in love with that. And I have to give a shout out to the people in the Midwest, specifically Dallas Clark. So everybody, again, in Iowa, please like Boog. I am constantly eating the one thing that was introduced to me by one of you guys, and that is pancakes with peanut butter and hot syrup.
By the way, this is for our audience. We're watching a game. It was a couple weeks ago. They have a cutaway at Dallas Clark Boog doesn't talk about the Super Bowl experience with him. Boog doesn't talk about, hey, he's a great teammate, fantastic player, really good hands, really, really integral part of the offense. First thing Boog's brings up, Kev, yo, the pancakes. Let me tell you what Dallas Clark introduced me to. And that's all you need to know about my man and how he thinks it is processing. He went straight to the peanut butter pancakes, but we will try that out. For our audience that's not part of the Midwest, once again, this weekend, hot pancakes, spread some peanut butter, let that thing melt, and then a little bit of syrup, and then enjoy, right? You may need to plot about an hour afterwards for the nap, but at least enjoy it as you get ready to watch football. Okay, we will talk a little bit more Alabama later on.
And they can make sure they take a nap like this.
The Mark Sanchez special. Lean back. Boy, no one can take some naps anywhere at any time after a nice meal than our boy Mark. Shout out to him. We will talk a little bit about Alabama in a little bit later in the program. And as they face A&M this weekend, and Georgia faces Auburn on the Plains. But I want to get to the ABC schedule because we got the River River Showdown, and that is the 117th meeting at the Cotton Bowl featuring Oklahoma and Texas. This feels different. Now, Oklahoma is favored by 3.5 points. But, Boog, like, just the way these teams are coming in, the vibe feels completely different from previous years, right? I think it's anticipated that Oklahoma is going to put up offense. I mean, they're averaging 38 points per game. But we still feel like, yeah, it's okay. But, like, they're struggling running the football. Spencer Rattler has completed 76% of his passes. But the vibe with Oklahoma is just not there. And are we at fault thinking that with these close games that they're in? Or is there something to this, this bend, but yet to break, and maybe they break this weekend against Sark and this offense?
Yeah, I think there's something to that. First of all, stats are like bikinis, Kev. They show some things, but they don't reveal everything. So don't look at the stats of Spencer Rattler and be like, okay, he's having a really good year. He's not. He's not having the type of year that would lead you to believe where Mel Kiper had him back in April as his number one prospect for the 2022 draft. So he's playing okay. I'm actually predicting the upset this weekend, Kev. I like the Longhorns. I think Texas's defense has just enough athletes. I like what they do up front. They have the speed on the back end. And I just think that Oklahoma is due to get knocked down and get hit in the mouth. We saw what Tulane did to them in Norman. We've seen other teams. We saw Kansas State go toe-to-toe with them. I just think that this is a perfect setup because I think Texas can do the one thing that a lot of other teams can't do, which is match Oklahoma's speed on the back end. And I think they can run the football with Bijan Robinson. And it's going to force the defensive coordinator, Alex Grinch, for the Sooners to play in a way in which he doesn't want to play. He's going to have to bring the safety down in the box. He's going to have to be ultra aggressive. Then I think at that point, Texas can hit you over the top with some big plays. So I like Texas in this game. I think Oklahoma has kind of been playing with fire all year, and I think they finally get burned in the Red River rivalry this weekend against the Longhorns. And this will be a huge win for Sark because we all know when you're at a program like Texas, you're judged against your rival. Michigan has been judged against Ohio State, Alabama, Auburn. I can go on, and USC, UCLA, you are going to be judged against your arch rival. And regardless of what people say, Texas's arch rival is always going to be Oklahoma. From a fan base standpoint, from a recruiting standpoint. And so I am going with the Longhorns, hook them this weekend, Kev.
Boog, I want to read a quote to you and I want to get your response because you brought up Alex Grinch. Freshman Jordan Mukes, true freshman, saw some playing time at cornerback. He gave up a 50 plus yard completion. Oklahoma won by 6 at Kansas State. But Alex Grinch said this: I'm trying to get some young guys going. It's also indicative of how guys are practicing. We believe in practice. Some of our players don't. Guys get opportunities when other guys maybe don't practice well. When your defensive coordinator says that, the week of Texas, there's more to this than meets the eye. Like, it feels like Alex is sending a message this week. Yo, you guys better turn it up. I'm turning it on you publicly. You better turn it up because you're not getting the message after the first 5 weeks. When you hear that from a defensive coordinator talking about his team and his defense, not caring for some guys, not caring for practice, what's your first thought?
Well, I agree with you. I think he's trying to send a message, Gabe. Here's what I also think he's trying to do. He's trying to send a message to the veteran guys. Hey, just because you've played and you have your spot doesn't mean you're going to keep it, because we got to earn that every day on the practice field. And to the young guys who he thinks that may be more talented, hey, I see you. I recognize you. Okay, continue to perform, or let's take it up a notch, and you too can be on this field. So I just think they're trying to heighten the awareness. They realize that right now they're undefeated and they have an opportunity. Regardless of how they play, they still can control their future by playing better. And I think as a coach, you're never satisfied. And I think they realize the challenge they're going to go up against. And just like we're talking about their ability to get burned, I think the coaching staff also sees the tape also. So they're like, at some point, do we talk about it after we get burned, or do we try to look into the future and see what's going to happen and try to correct it maybe before it does? But there is no doubt. I completely agree. This is a message being sent. And on top of that, Kev, when you do it publicly, how many times have we seen these messages be delivered publicly where we as the media can notice them and talk about them? And now, as a coaching staff, I don't have to do the coaching anymore, because everybody outside the building, hey, man, that defense has got to play better. Those guys, hey, coach called you out. And so now the peer pressure, the pressure outside the building starts to come in. So this is a coaching tactic that we've seen before from some of the great coaches, Nick Saban. We've seen it from Urban Meyer back in the day. You try to use every advantage you can, and sometimes that's the media.
Here's the thing. If they don't show up this weekend, a comment like that starts to fester and blows up in his face, right? If they win, then it's like, oh, it's part of what he's doing. He woke up the team in the sense publicly. You could say all those things behind closed doors. When you publicly call the team out, especially on the college level, you're sending that message, right? And bottom line, Bijan Robinson, if the Sooners want to win this game, Bijan Robinson has to be stopped. 35 carries against TCU. Clearly, Sark has realized, compared to the previous staff, I've got to get my best player of the football as much as possible. I mean, Robinson's second in the nation in rushing, behind only Kenneth Walker of Michigan State. And surprise, surprise, look how well the Spartans are playing. When you realize that the best player on the field needs to touch the ball like at least 25 to 30 times, good things will happen. And that's what Sark's doing. I think Casey Thompson's done a fantastic job since he's been put in that situation as the starting quarterback for Texas. I'm with you. I think Texas wins this game, and they get 3.5 points, but the environment's going to be great. Comes down to Bijan Robinson, and can Oklahoma run the football? Kennedy Brooks, Eric Gray, can you give your quarterback some type of time? And that is the offensive line trying to respond in a game like this. So we'll see if Texas can wipe the bad taste out of their mouth after what they did against Arkansas. They've been looking really good the last couple weeks. In games where we thought, maybe this is now when Texas loses, the pressure will be on Oklahoma coming into a matchup. Later on that afternoon on ABC, number 10 BYU, undefeated, taking on Boise State. Kalani Sitake's done a phenomenal job. Shoot, they should be in the Pac-12 considering what they've done with the Pac-12 schedule. Jaren Hall's missed the last couple games because of the rib injury. Their backup, Baylor Romney, had a concussion. I do not think he will play. He's in the protocol situation. We'll learn more as Wednesday comes out. They had Jacob Conover, the freshman, play as well. To me, this is a fantastic game just because I think BYU gets the stage on ABC. Boise's played some tough teams. They don't come in with a great record. I think I want to take this time right now, at least for the next, 30 to 40 to seconds to a minute, to praise Kalani Sitake. He's done an amazing job at BYU. What they did last year and what he's doing this year, you lose Zach Wilson, you slide in, you lose Jaren Hall the last couple games, you bring in Baylor Romney. It's a credit to him. He makes no excuses. We just go out there, we play who's in front of us, no matter who we lose at quarterback.
Yeah, I completely agree with you, Kev. And to me, BYU, we always talk about teams that have identity. Or identities, and BYU has always had one. Even when they had Zach Wilson, they still ran the football. They still use their advantage because of the players that go on their missions. They have some very physically developed offensive linemen. They run the football. They pound you at the line of scrimmage, and they control the clock. And, yeah, it looks differently, especially when they have explosive guys at the quarterback position, like Zach Wilson. I like them. I just wonder where Boise State's psyche is. You know, I watched them on a Friday night against UCF, and Kev, I went to bed and Boise State was up 21-0. I woke up and UCF had won the game. And I'm like, what in the hell happened? So ever since that night, I've been wondering where their psyche is. You come all the way to Orlando, Florida. The game was delayed. You go up, and like a loss like that can wear on you. And I just wonder physically, mentally, where the psyche of that team, especially if they get down, or especially regardless of whether they get down or up, just overall that mentality. I like BYU in this game. I'm a believer in their program, what they do, how mature those guys are. And obviously, it goes without saying the level of commitment that you make when you go to that school.
Yes, Itaki deserves all the credit and the praise that's coming his way. Boise comes in at 2-3 again. It's a little misleading, but they're also coming off a loss to Nevada. We'll see. When we talk about rivalries and recruiting bases, this is like one of those games where it means a hell of a lot to both programs because they recruit from the same type of base. And deep down, these two programs absolutely despise each other. So can't wait to see how that plays out. You mentioned teams that identify and know who they are. And we've got that with number 9, Michigan. That is our nightcap at Nebraska, favored by 3.5 points on ABC. Harbaugh 5-0 for the second time in his career at Michigan. And he won a game as an underdog. That's the first time he's done that at Michigan last weekend, right? When you see this team, get ready for Nebraska. This could be tricky here because Michigan has not faced a mobile quarterback like Adrian Martinez. And Nebraska seems to have gotten back on track here. They were really impressive in what they did against Oklahoma a couple weeks ago. Is this one of those you just pencil in Michigan, or should we be a little worried or concerned about Michigan in a game like this on the
road? I'm not just going to pencil in Michigan. I'm not going to do that. But I do think Michigan is the better team. I've just been impressed with what they do. It's Scott Frost in Nebraska. At some point, I don't want to say they peaked at Nebraska under him yet, but I don't know if they've taken another step. And I just look at what Michigan can do. They understand who they are. They're going to run the football. Even if they don't get to 300 yards, which they've done several times this year, they're going to continue to run the football. And we saw maybe a new duo, Cade McNamara to Cornelius Johnson. Is that little duo going to start to show up week in and week out? Man, if that does, then look out. I don't know if Nebraska really knows what to do with Martinez. I mean, I saw Martinez drive back throwing the football. He was rolling out like he was Steve Young. He's a better runner than passer. Are they going to be able to do that against this Michigan defense? I doubt it. I think all signs point to this game being a little close in the first half, but I think Michigan's physicality, the way they pound the football overall, I think will wear on Nebraska in the second half. And then the questions continue about Scott Frost and where this program is, which they've continued all season.
Yeah, well, they played Michigan State really tough, heartbreaking loss in overtime. They dominated Northwestern last week. So we'll see where the confidence is with a team like this. If they don't get it started, I'm just going to play a hypothetical. If they don't get the first two or three possessions rolling in that Lincoln crowd and Michigan comes down and scores and they're down double digits early on, what's going to be left for Nebraska? You know, do they respond? How do they feel with that crowd? Because I think they play really well when we have no expectations. Yeah. And I think that crowd's going to expect some type of performance in prime time with Martinez and what they've done the last couple of weeks. At least they've been showing heart, and I got to give them a ton of credit with that, not losing the program. I want to know more about Michigan in a game like this because it feels like every single week we learn something, right? McNamara doesn't have a big arm, but we learn, hey, okay, listen, you're going to play up with the play action. We'll do a flea flicker, and then he can find the open man down the field. That's the stuff that I like with Michigan, where we're seeing some explosive plays because their run game is outstanding. And one thing about this team, too, is they played really well defensively. How are they going to handle Martinez if Martinez can protect the football? And that's always been an issue in big game situations, trying to do too much. We see a turnover, a fumble. We'll see a sack. We'll see an interception. Can he stay, I think, disciplined in a game like this? Because if he could, it could be a close one by the end of the night in Lincoln. All right. Usually when it comes to our DEFCON picks, we've got three. Boog deciding two is good enough. So let's start with you and who you got this week after what you saw over the weekend on DEFCON.
First of all, Kev, we're going with the Texas A&M Aggies, DEFCON 2.
DEFCON 2.
Kev, when you give your head coach, who's already making about $7 million, and you give him an extension on top of that, now he's making $9.5 million, the expectations are not 2 to 3 losses. But that's exactly where the Texas A&M Aggies seem to be headed toward. You lose a rivalry game against the Arkansas Razorbacks in Jerry's World. And everybody's like, okay, Arkansas is a good team. Let's see where they go. Then they turn right back around and lose to Mississippi State. The expectations were national championship. I read all the press clippings from all the Texas Aggs magazines and everything out in College Station, Kev. They are totally, totally disappointed. They are heartbroken because they honestly felt like they could beat anybody on their schedule, including Alabama, which is the next team on their schedule. So, Kev, they are staring 3 straight losses in the face with their $9 million head coach. And I just don't think, relative to the expectations and looking at the actuality of where they are, no one, and I mean no one in College Station, is going to be happy after this weekend, because the likelihood of them beating Alabama is about the same as it would be you getting under 315 pounds and actually bench pressing at one time, slim and none. So the Aggies are in a whole lot of trouble, Kev.
First off, no one said here on this podcast that I could even lift 315 pounds on a bench. So, I don't even know why that's relevant, okay? I would even say that I'd like to question if you could lift 315 pounds on a bench press right now these days when you get off your Peloton, okay? So that would be the bigger question.
Okay.
I will say this. You can't lose to Mississippi State. I don't care who the quarterback is. I know you lost Haynes King. You have Zach Calzada, who threw for 135 yards, 12 of 20. Listen, you got a bunch of 5 stars on your team. You cannot lose to Mississippi State, regardless, especially, Boog, especially with the expectations coming into this season. When you say this, specifically to the Houston Touchdown Club, we're going to beat his ass while he's there. Don't worry. And that is Jimbo Fisher saying that about Nick Saban this summer. And Saban had the best response in golf. And let me tell you, Nick Saban, look what he did last weekend to Lane Kiffin, especially early on. We were up 35-0. And you know the message was sent after hearing, oh, they put up 48 points last year on you. They closed the gap here. Nick was fully aware of it. And now when you make those quotes this summer, this line is 17.5. Man, let me tell you, I would take Alabama by 25. And I know that's ridiculous to think earlier in the season, but Nick's fully aware of these comments, Boog. Fully, you don't think he's going to put the heat on Jimbo in a situation like this? And I like what Jimbo says. But if you're going to say those things and get the contract extension, like you said, 9 years, $94 million. Yeah. By the way, genius this offseason to get it. You can't lose to Mississippi State. You just can't.
Yeah,
it's going to be really bad, man. I'm surprised you have it at 2. I would have thought you went 1, but I think you're saving 1 for somebody else. Let's go to your second team.
Yes, Kev, team number 2, DEFCON number 1. About 2 inches from hitting the panic button, and it pains me to say this, the LSU Tigers.
DEFCON 1.
Less than 24 months from being representative as the best team, maybe in college football history, definitely the best offense, less than 24 months from winning a national championship, less than 24 months from getting a contract extension, to see where my alma mater is right now, Kev, is very disappointing. It's heartbreaking. Coach Ed Orgeron has been given the opportunity. You know, the coordinators left. Joe Brady went to the NFL. Dave Aranda got a head coaching job with the Baylor Bears. He tried one set of coordinators, Steve Ensminger, and Bo Pelini, that didn't work. He was given the opportunity, Kev, to change coordinators. He tried to go back and recreate the magic with a Joe Brady clone. That's not working. He brought back brought Durante Jones from Minnesota to be the defensive coordinator. That's working somewhat. But for this team, Kev, to get embarrassed and physically beaten by UCLA, to lose a game in which they were up 13-0 against Auburn, to still have some of the same issues that pop up, whether it's blown coverages defensively, whether it's lack of getting the play calls in offensively, and to almost look like they aren't organized, falls solely on the head coach. And when we talk about expectations, there's only one expectation in Baton Rouge. It's to be competing for a national championship. And unfortunately, that is gone right now. And the blood is in the water. The sharks are circling. It's a must win every game the rest of the season, because if they don't turn it around, Kevin, I don't think anybody has any confidence they will. The AD is Scott Woodard. Scott Woodard is known to go big game hunting. And LSU will be in a situation that Scott will have to really think long and hard about making a move, because the expectations are not to be 7-5 or 6-6. And that's what it looks like LSU is heading toward if they're lucky. So it is all hands on deck in Baton Rouge, and we are about 2 inches from hitting the panic meter. And it pains me to say that, because you know as well as I know what college football means, not only to me, but when you're an NFL player, there's nothing more exciting and nothing more gratifying than when you can pound your chest about your alma mater. We all do it. It's fun. It feels good. But there's also nothing more painstaking when the alma mater has expectations and doesn't meet them. And right now, LSU is just not meeting them. And I think Coach O has to take full responsibility for it.
Two games over 500 since winning the national championship in that special 2019 run. Orgeron saying, I'm responsible for the performance. Listen, and he's fully aware, when you clean house with the coordinators, you get one pass. And then this is the second time. And you brought up Jake Peets not getting plays in quick enough. You just scratch your head and say, what the heck are we doing in practice? Like, how are you setting up this offense if you can't instill confidence in getting the plays in time when you make adjustments at the line specifically? So they got Kentucky, and Kentucky, Mark Stoops, we need to celebrate him and what he's
done. Kentucky's a better team right now, Kev.
Yes.
Kentucky's a better team. Kentucky just beat Florida.
Yep.
Kentucky has shown us that Mark Stoops has taken less talent and developed them, and they've gotten better and better. That's a sign of a good coach, Kev. I don't know if we can say the same thing about what's going on in the Baton Rouge. That's another reason why people are starting to like, okay, who have you brought in and developed? Have you taken a team in which you probably didn't have as much talent and overachieved? We know what you can do when you have superstars like Burrow, Brady, Joe Brady and the defensive coordinator, Dave Aranda. But can you take lesser talent and coach them up? Mark Stoops has done an outstanding job of that, and that's another kind of flaw in the resume of Ed Orgeron.
They can't run, Boog. Like, you're LSU. How can you not run the football? That's the one thing that has stood out to me in the last year and a half. Like, you're LSU. You have your pick of running backs throughout the country. You let some go, like Travis Etienne, to other places, and you still are producing super talent in that state. And for this team not to be able to run is inexcusable. And like you mentioned, you cannot develop that talent to be able to run when you bring in 4- and 5-star guys. And Boog, you mentioned 7-5 or 6-6. Listen to this run here for LSU after Kentucky, where they're underdogs.
I know.
Florida, know. Ole yes. Miss, Alabama, and yes. Arkansas.
Yes. And then you finish off with, Texas A&M.
At the end of the year, and who knows how desperate Jimbo's going to be. Like, Boog, it just does not look good. Listen, 1 week at a time. But let me tell you, you think it's DEFCON 1 this week, and you know more than ever if they lose to Kentucky. And I know you said Kentucky's a better team, but just how the optics are losing to Kentucky in football. It's just a different standard at LSU. And, And Stoops should be celebrated. So we will end on a high note with Mark Stoops and celebrate that 5-0 start and what he has done in changing that program's mentality and the commitment to football. It's a basketball school, but man, they have put in so much money with the resources and the facilities, and Stoops has paid off. He's done a phenomenal job of recruiting in that area, right? And then selling to many of the kids in the Midwest. You get the chance to play in the SEC, come here. That goes a long way. So we'll leave it at that, Boog. I'm sorry. That you're going through it, but you always got 2019. We always got you on the sidelines, smiling in New Orleans.
Hey, Kev, this is for you here.
Hey, man, listen, you got that, all right? Got that. And I love you, too, and I'm always going to be number one in your heart for our audience that's wondering what Boog just gave me. All right, be good, man. We'll see you over the weekend. And next time, just, you know, wear a tie. All right, that'll help the look.
Oh, hey, I promise you, I may come on this podcast naked with a towel, but I will never, ever have a towel. I can promise you that.
Anthony, you're the best. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Kevin Migandi.
That'll do it. Always a fun time on Wednesdays here with Booger McFarland. Big thanks to Taylor Schwenk on the other side, our fantastic producer. Oh, I think Taylor's going to get it tomorrow. When our boy Joey joins the show to talk about the Maryland Terps. Taylor, you took one on the chin. My goodness.
Oof, yikes, dude. I mean, I told you I wasn't totally confident. I mean, there was everything I said wasn't unreasonable at that time. There were just some circumstances that went into the deflating loss. You lose your best player, that's gonna kill your team and their morale. So, but I'll own up to it all.
Fair point. All right. But Joey doesn't care. So get ready as Joey Galloway. You will join us. He will be ruthless because that's what he does, as we will get our picks from week 6 tomorrow. I'm sure he's going to be ruthless with some of my picks. We'll also empty the notebook with one of our .com reporters who are college football insiders, and they set the table for all the action over the weekend. So enjoy your Wednesday. We will talk to you tomorrow.